You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the future of e-commerce. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Today on the show, we're talking to Laura Berenswu. She's the co-founder of Shippo. Laura grew up all over the world, in Germany, Ecuador, and China. Today, I'm talking to her from her offices in San Francisco. Shippo, if you don't know, is a shipping platform that helps you get postage and great shipping rates for the packages that you send. Laura started Shippo in 2014 with her co-founder, Simon, after selling sustainable handbags online and discovering firsthand how hard it is to ship efficiently. So in a world where you can order from Amazon and receive your package the next day, it's really important for brands, especially young companies, to rise up to that expectation and offer fast and efficient shipping. That's what Shippo does, and that's what we're talking about today. Now, Laura's done some really great talks lately, giving more background about the founding story of Shippo, and we've linked to some of those in the show notes. But for this episode, I really wanted to dive deep into some pretty nerdy logistics and shipping topics that we think about all the time at Lumi. And I knew that Laura was going to be able to rise to that challenge, and she totally delivered, pun slightly intended. I hope you enjoy it. Laura Berenswu, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to try and explain what you do, and you tell me if this is correct. You're the CEO of Shippo, and it's an API mostly that helps companies, brands who are selling things online get rates and shipping labels and tracking information. And you also provide like a web interface where people can log in and create those types of things so that they can ship packages more easily.
Yep, that is pretty much what we do.
What else do you say about it?
So we are, as I mentioned, a platform that sits between e-commerce stores and a network of different shipping providers. So we connect to all different shipping providers here in the U.S., but also internationally. And then we help our customers, e-commerce stores, compare rates across providers, get shipping labels, get customs forms if it's an international shipment, get the tracking data and send the tracking data back to the customers, figure out returns, and then manage the shipments across different providers on a single and unified platform. And we try to reduce friction as much as possible so that people who aren't logistics experts are able to offer competitive shipping solutions and meet the demands that customers these days have around shipping.
Yeah, when you mentioned carriers, you guys have really expanded a lot. It looks like when you go to your carriers page, it's like 30 or 40 different carriers from all around the world.
Yeah, so this year we spend a lot of time expanding our carrier network. Our goal at some point is to have universal coverage, and shipping providers, there are a lot more shipping providers than people would think. Back then when I did my research around our last round of financing, we were able to find roughly 500,000 different shipping providers and courier services worldwide.
Wow.
And yes, so that's a stat that most people don't know. When people think about shipping providers, they think about FedEx, UPS, DHL, but in fact, the market is a lot more fragmented. So we've got regional shipping providers such as OnTrack here in California. We've got courier services like Deliv and Postmates. There are intra-city or on-demand shipping options such as Uber Rush. So what I'm trying to say is there are a lot of different shipping providers out there, and now we're also talking about drone delivery, we're talking about delivery robots. So the market is also innovating, and our goal is to have every single shipping option on the platform at some point and help our customers access all of the options that will help them ship faster, ship better, or ship cheaper to their customers.
Yeah, and a lot of these companies have APIs. They have ways that you can connect and get information, like tracking information, or get labels, or get buy shipping. But they're all different. Each of them has their own API, and so it makes it really complicated if you're trying to integrate multiple different carriers. So what you do really makes that a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly. So when we talk to customers, most of them are using a multi-carrier strategy. So most of the e-commerce stores want to work with different shipping providers at the same time to be able to offer different shipping options to their customers or to be able to optimize. What you described, the problem is exactly accurate. So different shipping providers offer different kinds of technologies. There is really no standard or unified system. And given that these technologies are so different, it makes sense for us to build an interface in between that connects to all different technologies at the same time to be able to allow our customers to manage multiple different shipping providers and then to be able to turn these shipping providers on and off however they want. So if they want to add another shipping options, it's not a lengthy integration process. It's just part of the interface that we're already offering.
Now, when you said 500,000 different carriers exist, does that include freight as well? Or is it only like parcel and courier?
Yeah, it includes LTL as well. And so it's like all different shipping providers, but it does not include ocean freight. So it's just land delivery.
Break that down. Like, what is LTL? What is parcel? What is freight? What is courier? Just describe at a high level what all those different things are.
For sure. So it depends how much you're trying to ship. So let's start with ocean freight. There you typically ship an entire container, at least one container, if not multiple containers. And then when the ocean, when the ship gets to the port here in the US from wherever you're sourcing your items, it typically breaks down into freight shipping that is like a truckload or less than a truckload. So LTL means less than a truckload. And from there, you unbundle your container and you deliver the items to your warehouse. And in the warehouse, you unbundle it even further so it gets to the individual items. And then someone orders from your e-commerce store whatever item they'd like to purchase. And then you ship the items individually with a parcel to the end customer. So these different shipping options, they're just part of a supply chain. And sometimes people don't do ocean freight. They do air delivery if it's something that is smaller and very urgent or higher value. So there is really no one size fits all. It depends on where you're sourcing from, what you're trying to ship. But these are all different like options that fit, that go along the way of the supply chain.
Yeah. And if you're someone at home, typically you're interacting mostly with parcel carriers like USPS and UPS, FedEx, or the courier ones are the ones that are like intra-city trying to do something same day, right?
Yeah, exactly. So when you're at home, you're typically getting a postman from one of the better known shipping providers to come to your place and deliver whatever you ordered online. Some people also get less than truckload deliveries. If they're ordering furniture or like larger items, then it won't be delivered by UPS or FedEx. It'll be a specialized, like larger, less than truckload moving company. The intra-city providers, most people these days interact with them through the on-demand apps. So like ordering food online, you probably have a courier service delivering those like the food item you ordered in a timely manner to your home.
So who are your customers? Who's using Shippo these days?
Yeah, so our customers are e-commerce stores and also platforms and marketplaces. And we are typically working with independent brands selling their items, their unique items online, either on Shopify, on Etsy, Magento, or building their own homegrown shopping cart systems.
And what's the benefit to them? Aside from the API, integration, that makes it a lot easier. I know you also have the web version where you don't have to connect to the API. You can just log in and create a shipment through that interface.
Our goal is really to reduce friction as much as possible. So our customers can integrate the API if they want to, and the integrating the API allows them to automate the label creation and the shipping rate comparisons in the background. Or if they don't have a developer in-house, and that is very common for smaller mom-and-pop e-commerce stores, then we don't want them to go through the trouble example of like finding a freelance developer and hiring one, but we offer a web dashboard that anyone can log into and use that web dashboard to create shipping labels, either one-off or in a batch system where you can get hundreds of labels at the same time. And the benefit for our customers is really like most of our customers don't enjoy thinking about shipping. It's something that they would like to outsource to a third party. They want a shipping expert to be able to handle that for them. And we want to be that shipping expert for them. So instead of having to worry about integrating and maintaining multiple different shipping technologies or even relationships with the shipping providers, they're able to just connect to us either through the interface or through the API, and we're that layer in between that helps them figure out how to like ship best.
Yeah, and so the kind of range and scale, it sounds like you have on one end people who are using eBay, Etsy, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. to ship small volumes of things, and then on the higher end, like what are the biggest customers on your platform doing? They're big e-commerce companies?
Yeah, so we have bigger e-commerce companies that ship out of their warehouses. Some people have multiple warehouses. That's actually one of my favorite shipping problems to figure out. When people have multiple different warehouses, and then some items, like you get an order for multiple items, and there is no warehouse with every single item in one warehouse, but you have to ship different items from different locations, and then you have to figure out how to combine them in a way that is most cost effective. So that's a really interesting shipping challenge for people with like multiple warehouses and inventory spread across multiple warehouses.
How does Shippo deal with that problem? It's all computed automatically through the API?
Right now, it is not fully automated yet. We're working on that. So we started as a company first for SMB customers, and now we're going upstream. So slowly, like understanding these problems for larger customers and building algorithms to automate that. Right now, we work together with the customers to help them figure out how to build an algorithm that makes sense for them in a case-by-case scenario. But yes, the goal is to have business rules in place, and that is something that I'm very excited about for the 2018 roadmap, to be able to allow our customers to set up business rules, meaning that if customer chooses like the cheapest, always go with, for example, USPS. Or if the end customer chooses the fastest option, always go with FedEx. Like being able to set up a couple of these, like first simple business rules and then going more and more complicated for like automation to just help our customers save more time.
I have to say that, you know, for us at Limi, the biggest thing that we deal with is actually freight shipments. So because we're usually delivering pallets of packaging boxes to our customers. And most of the time we're not delivering straight to their office. We're delivering to a warehouse or to a third party logistics firm. I really wish there was Shippo for freight, or that you guys go in that direction someday, because as complicated as it is for parcel shipments and things that go from warehouses to homes, it's even more complicated, even more regional and low tech in the world of freight. And so, man, that is a big problem that someday hopefully you'll get into.
Yeah, at some point. So right now we're very much focused on parcel delivery, and the parcel delivery space is large enough and growing given that e-commerce is growing so fast. But at some point I would love to be able to move into freight as well and offer like a one-stop shop for our customers managing inbound shipments and then also outbound shipments. But it's something in the more distant future.
I think that is a good strategy, because there's so much low-hanging fruit already in the parcel world, and freight is going to require a whole different strategy, yeah. Which is actually convincing some of these local carriers. You might have to start building software for them, mm-hmm. in order for them to even be able to manage their process, because a lot of it is very analog right now. So there isn't even an API that you can connect to and integrate yet.
Yeah, we're seeing that with some shipping providers that are more specialized and more regional. But yes, that is a huge problem. If there is not even an interface for us to connect to, it makes our job a lot more difficult. But what you said about like shipping I do think that the parcel delivery space, like, it's at a very interesting inflection point, given that e-commerce stores, like most e-commerce stores these days, are looking for different ways to like innovate around their shipping strategy, given that Amazon and Amazon Prime has really taught end customers, so online shoppers, to expect free and fast shipping. And these kinds of expectations are, well, Amazon can meet them because Amazon has, like, they're spending roughly this holiday season, they're spending roughly $7 billion on shipping in the U.S. only, and they're able to do that because they've got very profitable segments such as AWS as part of their business. And most other, like, retail or e-commerce store out there just can't follow suit. And it's interesting to be in the space when people are suddenly looking at shipping very differently. It's no longer just something that happens in the background. It's something that end customers care about. And that's like a perception that changed in the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. So this is great. There's a couple stories that you shared on Twitter recently that I wanted to dive into. And one of them you already mentioned was the story that came out. I'm not sure if this was the original, but Todd Bishop on GeekWire wrote about this fact that it looks like Amazon is going to be spending $7 billion on shipping this quarter. Mm-hmm. And it's been gradually rising. I mean, alongside the fact that Amazon in general as a business is growing. But for context, like, their sales this quarter might be in the range of like 150 to 200 billion. So mm-hmm. they're spending somewhere in the range of like sometimes up to 10% of revenue for the e-commerce business alone on shipping. And they, like you said, are able to offset that. Well, first of all, they're not a very profitable company currently. So they're like maximizing every dollar, but they also have these other business units that allow them to pour all the profits back into offering everyone free shipping. And I think that the customers that you're talking about, you know, Shippo customers are similar to Lumi customers. They're e-commerce businesses that some of them do ship through Amazon. They use like Fulfillment by Amazon or sell through Amazon, but most of them also have their own e-commerce store and fulfill from their own warehouse. And that more and more creates the expectation that the same level of shipping, the same speed, the same price is expected of any e-commerce business. And so it seems like you really have to design your price points and your products from the beginning to be able to be shipped at like low costs. Is that something that you advise customers on, or how do you guys help people understand that?
Yeah, no, and that's like, in my mind, the most exciting part about shipping. So when we started this business, I first looked at shipping as a way for our customers to cut costs, to be able to save more money and to save time, not trying to figure shipping issues out. But what we then realized is it's actually a way for our customers to grow their business. It's about cutting costs for sure, but if you have the right shipping options at checkout and like you're able to use shipping as a tool to grow your business and to acquire more customers. And like, to take a step back here, I think like the frustrating part for our customers is like they found an online shopper who is excited about their product, puts the product into the shopping bag at checkout. And then at checkout, they realize shipping is too expensive, or it does not arrive on time, or the shipping options are not stated clear enough. And then they decide to close the window and buy somewhere else. It's such a like weird lost opportunity, because the customer has intended to buy that product, and then what causes the customer to walk away is the shipping option, like something that should not be a competitive strength of like small and mid-sized businesses, but Amazon has turned that into a competitive advantage. So our customers are looking to innovate there as well. Anyway, so there is really no one-size-fits-all, so it's very hard to tell our customers you have to offer free shipping in order to like convert more customers, or you have to do this or that. Like, it really depends on what kinds of items our customers are selling. So normally, if you offer multiple different options at checkout, you're able to meet more and different customer preferences, meaning you can have a free shipping option that takes a little longer to arrive, then some mid-level shipping option, and then also offer an option that is like super fast, maybe overnight delivery, but it's fairly expensive. That way a customer can opt into like waiting longer but not paying for it, and another customer with a different set of preferences, they can opt into like paying $25 but getting it tomorrow. And that's like especially important if you're like the getting something tomorrow option is especially important if you're selling products that are easily being used as gift options. So something that people need in a predictable manner. And I think like that's the other point, like showing customers when exactly it'll get there. So not just saying this will take 2 days to ship, but saying like it'll get there by Friday, December, I don't know, like what is this Friday? Friday, December 15th. So being like very, being specific. Exact, yeah, being specific about delivery times. And then a lot of people forget to mention how long it'll take for the item to ship out. So if it'll take more than a day for the item to ship out, that's something you should mention on the checkout page as well. So it's 2 day deliveries, but it'll take an extra day for the item to leave the warehouse. And then the customer expectation does not stop there. The customers are expecting the like e-commerce store to keep them updated about like what the tracking status is, what's going on with the package. And these are great options to make sure that customers don't write in and don't take up customer support time, but for you to like proactively send out tracking updates around it's on its way, it's like reached this facility, it's out for delivery today. That's a way for the e-commerce store to give the end customer peace of mind and to make sure that customer support is not like constantly dealing with shipping questions. And then last but not least, customers are also always looking for what the return options are. So if there will be free returns and if like the return label will be in the box. And I think that's a great way to increase customer loyalty, even if the item did not fit or was not what they expected. If you make returns as smooth as possible, the customer is more likely to come back and try something else.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. I'd be curious to know if you have much of data around what the conversion rates are or the differences if you provide free shipping or not. And I'm assuming, like you said, it's very case by case because it depends completely on the type of product. But there's this misconception that there is such a thing as free shipping, but there isn't. You know, someone pays for the free. Someone pays for the free shipping. It's either the customer or the business has taken a loss, or something is happening to provide you free shipping. So you would think that people could be maybe a little more rational about that, but people make very emotional decisions when they're shopping, and that extra $10 or $20 or $5 might make them decide to buy something or not to buy something. So if all it costs for you to offer free shipping is an extra $10, is it okay to put that in the price of the product and then it looks like it's free shipping and that is better?
No,
do you know
that's
what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a great question. And unfortunately, like there is really no one size fits all. To give you an example, let's say you're selling postcards, then shipping like a postcard is maybe $1. And then if you bake shipping into the postcard cost, the postcard would likely be, I don't know, $2.50. And then it seems like you're selling really expensive postcards. So like baking the shipping costs into your postcard cost would probably not increase your conversion rates because people would think your postcard is overpriced. But if you're selling luxury handbags and the handbag is $2,000 and then you're adding $20 in there, it's easy to hide the $20. And I do think that it sounds very irrational, but if you're already spending $2,000 on a handbag, you would probably not want to spend another or see another $20 at checkout for shipping because you're expecting shipping to be covered in such an expensive purchase already.
When people are trying to figure this out for their business, do you Do you encourage them to test different things out, or how do you find the right sweet spot between what you can amortize and what you have to charge to the customer?
Yes, and that is where I would love next year to be able to offer features that help our customers test these different options in a more flexible and convenient way. Like right now, we encourage people to, like, the easiest way to do this is to, like, offer multiple different options at checkout so that customers themselves can opt into whatever preference they have. And what we've heard anecdotally from our customers is that if they only offer free shipping, shipping typically has to take a little longer, and customers have started complaining. But by offering free shipping plus an option that customers need to pay for and that's faster, and then people still decide to opt into free shipping, they're accepting that it'll take a little longer and there are fewer customer complaints. So it's an interesting, like, psychology thing that's going on with the customers. You just want to give them more choices, so it's their own choice if it takes a day longer. It's not something that the e-commerce store is forcing upon them. Then another interesting experiment we heard about is one of our customers started offering free shipping, and then conversion rates went down, and it was very surprising for us. And they interviewed a couple of their customers, and what they then realized is because they didn't tell the customer how long it would take for the item to arrive, customers start, like, associated free shipping with something that'll take longer. And the customer was selling something like selling wedding gifts or, like, items that you would typically use at your wedding. And they wanted a very reliable time for this item to arrive, and free shipping just sounded too risky to them. So our, like, learning from there was whatever you say around shipping, you always have to tell the customer how long it takes for the item to be there.
Yeah, I think that is another aspect of Amazon that is maybe underappreciated, which is when you check out, everyone's used to seeing the options there, which provide an exact date at which you're going to receive that product. And that is actually, I mean, it's amazing that Amazon can do it at that scale with so many different warehouses shipping different things from different locations. But it's something that through your API people can do, or if they're using Shopify or some of these other platforms, is it possible to do that so that the customer actually sees the date?
Yep, it is possible. So we have the date information as part of our as one of our endpoints, so you're able to show that to your customers at checkout as well, and it's also available through our Shopify integration.
Yeah, because it also has to take into account how many, like you said, how many days it takes you to prepare that. If it takes,
yes,
if there's any sort of level of customization or something that needs to happen before the product is ready to ship, you know, that might add a day or 5 days or 2 weeks. And so predicting the date of arrival can be pretty challenging. But it seems like Shopify and other e-commerce platforms are really trying to help their sellers reduce the friction as well. I've noticed that Shopify lately will save your preferences, including shipping information and payment information, across all different Shopify stores, not just mm-hmm. the one that you go to. So when you get to the Shopify checkout, oftentimes, if you've used a completely different e-commerce business to buy something previously, you already have some of that saved information there, which helps reduce that friction to some extent.
Yeah, so you're talking about the online buyer perspective, right?
Exactly,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think what it's like pre-filling your shipping address, for example, that just makes the life of the buyer so much easier, not having to type that in every single time. And then understanding, like, some buyers, understanding just shipping preferences, it probably is something that's fairly consistent if there is a willingness to pay or a willingness to wait longer. I've not seen that feature in Shopify myself yet, but if they're doing that already, that's a really awesome, like, first step into making sure that, first of all, their e-commerce sites are able to convert better, but then that the buyers on these e-commerce sites are just more satisfied with the entire experience because it's just smoother and less friction.
I think Shopify offers it as
an option that you can select as a store owner to activate that and allow your customers to reuse information across different Shopify sites. But it does introduce this sort of trade-off that exists from the store's perspective. And I'm curious your thought on it, because you offer an API which is, you know, people can build any experience they want on top of that. They can build their own checkout system completely from scratch and make it look very personalized. So a lot of the e-commerce businesses, you know, that people are familiar with, you know, the Warby Parkers or Caspers and stuff like that, they've gone down the route of creating something very custom that preserves the look and feel of the brand throughout the whole experience. If you're using Shopify, you can't do quite as much in that direction. And so you're kind of left in this moment of trade-off of, do you want to maintain that like brand experience all the way throughout the checkout process, or do you want to make things a little bit easier for your customers and allow them to have like their saved information in there? And that seems like a really difficult choice. What's your take on that?
Yeah. So if we like, I often get the question why e-commerce stores don't just all sell on Amazon, because it's so much more convenient. Amazon is a big database. People go on there to find things, and then they could use Fulfilled by Amazon to get it out, and they wouldn't even use Shippo anymore. So I normally get that question from potential investors. And I think what most of our customers are really good at is building their own brand and building, like, owning the customer experience, making sure that they are very well differentiated from any other e-commerce store out there, not just in terms of the products they're selling, but also in terms of the story they're telling, the experience, the messaging that they have online, the lifestyle they try to convey. They do that across different channels, on their own website, but also on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, just telling that story consistently and building a real emotional connection with the end customer. And that's how they stand out in like a world where Amazon is just competing around price and like having the biggest database of, I'd say, more undifferentiated goods. And so tying that back to your question around whether or not like to own the entire or like whether it's important to have an online presence that is more differentiated, I would say the trade-off here is like a lot of, if you're investing in an online experience and you're able to like afford investing in that, it's not just the website that you can differentiate in. Like, it's also important to have all of the other channels, like all of the other social media channels, and be present there. So if you want to offer an experience that is built on Shopify, there are a lot of other channels that you can use to still like stand out, and you don't have to invest in the in-house development resources to build everything yourself. And for a lot of especially smaller e-commerce stores or e-commerce stores just getting started, I would say that's the perfect option, and they just should just focus on like making a very unique and like product and building a great brand and like telling a great story. And it's good for them that the different infrastructure pieces are already readily available and that they don't have to worry about that. As the company grows, I think you can start replacing some of these pre-built infrastructure pieces with like an experience that you've built in-house. But for companies just getting started, I think the existing components provided by Shopify, just as an example, they're very well made and like great for people getting started.
And it's also interesting that there's some other things that you can do to reduce friction. I know that actually Shopify uses the Google API to actually autofill addresses. So when you're starting to type an address in a checkout, there's a really good Google API that lets you autofill that really quickly, so that you only start typing in one box and then the zip code and state and country and all that kind of stuff all fills in. And that, you know, each little piece of friction like that, you know, if you can remove it or simplify it, that really helps.
Yeah.
Is that something that you guys have considered, offering an API like that, or other APIs that would help people who want to build really custom checkout systems?
Mm-hmm. So I completely agree that these small items, like wherever you reduce friction, it adds up. And it's not just about like making it easier for the customer. It's also like if you pre-fill addresses, it reduces risks around like failed deliveries because the address was incorrect or the address was invalid. So these are like pre-filling addresses and then doing an automatic address validation is something that we do as well. And it's mostly making sure that like when you order something online, you're not later, like you don't have to deal with issues around calling up the shipping provider and like correcting your address later on, or paying for extra surcharges if there was a failed delivery attempt and they have to try again. And the API that we've built, it's like we make sure that people can use it and build whatever checkout experience they want, and that filling out addresses automatically or address validation, or like some of our customers start shipping internationally, so we have global address validation in there as well, that we think through all of these potential pitfalls and try to like foresee them, because as I mentioned before, like we don't expect our customers to be shipping experts. We want to have thought through all of these potential issues in advance and offer them the right tools to be able to deal with them before they even happen.
Yeah, it seems like there's a big opportunity out there to create some sort of identity that people can use at checkout, because there's a real explosion of, you know, e-commerce companies. And I think that I don't foresee Amazon taking over 100% of the market. Like, you're right that there's still going to be a lot of people who want to create something that's more differentiated, more special than just the default Amazon checkout or Amazon store experience. And have you guys ever considered doing something like that, where you would try to remember people's address settings or billing settings across different checkouts?
Yeah, so what we have brainstormed internally quite a lot about is, like, how do we make sure, like, our goal is to help SMBs be as competitive as Amazon in terms of shipping. And how do we make sure that they're actually able to use shipping to grow their businesses and convert more customers online? And the one idea we had was, you know how, like, it would be great if customers going to an e-commerce store and maybe seeing a little Shippo logo at, like, checkout, knowing that, like, Shippo is a brand that will take care of
shipping. It's kind of like
Amazon
Intel
Prime,
Inside or
exactly,
something like
that. Or VeriSign. It's a trustworthy brand, and we'll take care of your shipping in a way that makes sense. And so we would like to eventually have a touch point or a brand awareness with the end customer as well. And that would include, like, being able to remember shipping preferences, offering the end customer an app or something similar to that, where all of their different like packages that are in transit are aggregated and shown. But right now we're focused on the seller and the seller only. So that's our first problem that we're trying to solve. Would love to be able to move into the buyer experience at some point as well, but it would only make sense if we can find a real link between how offering like a buyer experience will help our sellers convert more customers and grow faster.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are pretty used to the idea of logging in with Facebook, you know, today for something, and it'll automatically authenticate them, bring in, you know, their email address and their avatar or whatever it is into whatever system. You know, Facebook hasn't gone in this direction. I know that Amazon has like an API that allows you to check out. Kickstarter used to use it for their checkout system, where you can pull in your addresses, but it's very Amazon branded. And so it seems like there's room for something that feels more neutral, that is helping all these different e-commerce businesses solve that friction problem.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part, like being neutral on the shipping provider side and on the customer side. So we're very clear about being carrier agnostic as well. So we never push like FedEx or UPS or whatever shipping option on our sellers. Like, it's there on the carrier side, there's also no one size fits all. So whatever our customers want, we'll show them the right options for them. And then on the seller side, like being platform agnostic. So not just being an option for Shopify or for eBay sellers, but being able to provide the same kind of shipping backend to e-commerce sellers, no matter how they've built their e-commerce stores.
Yeah. Another thing that we haven't talked about is international. Mm-hmm. When I started my first business, we were, we started off of Kickstarter, and the first thing that we started shipped to 130 different countries. And we opened it up from the beginning. For me, I was actually born and raised in France. And so it was like important to me that my French friends could get the stuff that we were making. But it was really cool to be able to do that. And I was totally amazed by the fact that it worked pretty well. We had some issues here and there, but for the most part, it's kind of amazing that you can start a business and start shipping stuff to people all over the world. And if they can find you, they can buy from you.
Yes.
Is that something that you advise to people, or how does Shippo help with that?
Yeah, it's a great point, because I do think that e-commerce does not know any geographical boundaries. As you said, like when you find something online, when you find an item that you love, like you can't really tell if that store is based in France and Germany and the US and China, and you don't really care about that either. You just found something you really like, and you would like that item to be able to like arrive at your doorstep in a reasonable amount of time, and you don't want to pay too much for shipping. The unfortunate part here is that a lot of the small mid-sized e-commerce stores and even larger e-commerce stores, like international shipping comes with like having to fill out customs documents. Many times you have to work with a shipping provider that then offers like end-to-end tracking as well. So as an example, USPS, for instance, if you use them to ship internationally, the tracking status gets lost as soon as it, or like it stops tracking as soon as it leaves the US. So to offer a smooth and risk-free shipping experience, most of our customers, they then decide to use DHL or FedEx or one of those like international shipping providers to take care of their international shipments. And then many times our customers then also have to deal with like import taxes and figuring out how to calculate that in advance and if they're going to pay for it and bake it into the item price, or if it's something that they're then charging the customers later on, and how to communicate that to the customer so it's not like an unexpected fee that is coming afterwards that might, like if it's too unexpected or surprising, it might make the customer angry because they didn't sign up for that. So it comes with like a set of additional challenges. Oh, and not to forget like international returns, how to do that in a cost-effective way is another problem that our customers are often dealing with. So I would say in our customers, typically like when they do international shipping, they mostly, given that these are SMB customers, they mostly either open up to like different regions one by one, or meaning that they start to ship like to North America, all of North America, Canada, and the US, or they start shipping to Europe and Europe only. And then they try to do like more targeted marketing in those areas, driving demand specifically from these countries. We do have customers that just offer international shipping anywhere, and then they rely on inbound traffic for people to find them. And typically most of their volume is in the US, but sometimes they get an odd order from like an international customer as well.
I want to come back to some of those things because I want to go to this link that you shared recently. It was a TechCrunch story titled "Predicting Success in Startup Consumer Brands" by Matt Hyman. And you summarized it in a very friendly emoji-filled tweet, which basically summarized the five kind of big points that he was making in the piece. So he's talking about, you know, all the brands that we've mentioned already, like the Warby Parkers, Away, Casper, you know, Glossier, these types of brands that people are looking at that have been called vertical commerce brands, VCBs. The first, so do you want to describe roughly like the the five points yeah. that you summarized?
Yes. So, yeah, so that TechCrunch article, it's a really awesome one. It talks about what makes, like, if there are a common set of factors that can help us predict whether startups can be, like, consumer brand startups can be successful. And it starts with, like, giving examples around looking at whether this is a product that is difficult to purchase, and you can make it easier to purchase or cheaper to purchase by moving it online. So the examples that are given in this article are, like, it's really difficult to purchase mattresses. And there are different options. You have to go to a mattress store that is typically outside of the city. People don't understand a lot about mattresses. So, like, there was a great opportunity for brands like Casper, Tuft & Needle, or Purple to move that online. Same with, like, buying contact lenses. You have to go to the doctor to get a prescription. Then, like, these are difficult, just difficult items to buy.
Reducing friction. Mm-hmm. Again, yes. It's always about that.
Yes. And by moving it online and by making it just a lot more accessible and also simple to purchase, it's like that. That's the opportunity there. And then the next one, the next factor that's mentioned in the article is that we're looking at items that are either a high order value, so a mattress is an expensive item, or repeat purchases. So back to the contact lens example, you're going to reorder that every half a year or year, and you're doing that pretty consistently. And other examples here are like Stitch Fix, for instance, where it's a monthly subscription, so items that are going to be delivered to your doorstep every single month because it's a subscription box service. Then he also talks about how you have, like, the items you're selling have to have the margins that support a direct-to-consumer model. And then the point that I'm most excited about is, like, the ability to build, like, an emotional connection, a brand awareness with the customer. So building, like, Glossier, for instance, has started out first as a blog, and they have an amazing Instagram presence, and people follow Glossier even if they're not looking to buy makeup every single day. But they get inspired by, like, the pictures posted on there, the lifestyle being conveyed in those Instagram posts, and they, like, people get really excited about buying from Glossier, and they get so excited that they also tweet and Instagram their own Glossier products and create some sort of virality around the product. And I don't think people ever get that excited when they buy something from Amazon. Like, you would not Instagram your Amazon purchase unless you're getting, like, a huge box with, like, only a single tiny product in there, and you Instagram it to ridicule Amazon. Anyway, and then last but not least, you have to have the ability to ship these products. So the example in here is, like, the innovation that Casper made around selling mattresses online also includes, like, being able to ship mattresses in a box that someone, like a carrier like FedEx, can move. So they are able to, like, roll them up and ship them in a very, like, dense and small box.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a huge one from the perspective of how your shipping rates end up costing, because, well, maybe something that you can mention is like cubic pricing. That's a thing that's come about in the past few years that a lot of the carriers are pushing. Do you want to explain what that is? That's kind of related to, like, can you ship it easily?
Yeah, so it's a good point. Cubic pricing, that's one thing that's been an interesting change recently. And the question is really, like, how do you calculate your shipping rates? You calculate your shipping rates just like by size or by weight, or do you use a combination for that? And most of our customers, they have not worked with cubic rates before because it's not the most intuitive way to calculate your shipping. And some of them miss out on saving opportunities because they don't know that it falls into a certain cubic tier, and they've been calculating it differently and overpaying. So it's also, like, an optimization opportunity that we take care of for them, either, like, both in the API and the dashboard.
Yeah. So in this article from TechCrunch, there's these five kind of high-level principles that are trying to determine, can we sort of predict whether this company is going to have long-term, you know, longevity? Mm-hmm. You know, like, is, like you said, the repeat purchases or the high value, those things are important because if you don't have that as a business, it's going to be hard for you to retain customers or make enough money to, like, be viable as a business. But when we talk about things like the margins that are necessary, if you are offering free shipping, that's going to cut into your margin. So all of these things are kind of intertwined. It seems like a lot of the businesses that have found really good success, you mentioned Stitch Fix is another great example where they built a whole business model around the two-way shipments. So they send a box to, you know, the customer picks out two or three pieces of clothing and then sends back the rest. So the whole business model is completely integrated into the packaging that's needed to make that round trip. The shipping has been like figured out because that's all like, you know, in quotes, free shipping and free returns. And like the margins that have been built into the clothing accommodate the costs of shipping and packaging that are involved. So like the whole thing has been designed from scratch with like the e-commerce approach in mind. And that's a really interesting thing that it seems like there's so many other product categories that haven't really gone down that evolution yet.
Yep, I would agree. And then the other interesting part here is that it's easier than ever to be a store owner, given that people are more and more accustomed to buying stuff online. You don't have to have a brick and mortar presence anymore. And like, it's less of a, like, having a brick and mortar presence is fairly expensive. So you can, with like very low initial costs, you can get started easily on the internet. Most of the infrastructure pieces are readily available. You can connect a shopping cart system with an inventory management system with a 3PL, all of it just online without having to like leave your home and without having to build any of that yourself or like invest in resources to build that.
You mentioned the point about the emotional connection, mm-hmm. and I think it's really interesting because it ties into what you do as an API as well, which is I think all the really successful e-commerce brands try to find at each touch point an opportunity to do something that's a little bit more personal for the customer. And, you know, in your case, that might be like your shipment has left or your packages arriving. Those are a lot of touch points that through Shippo you have an opportunity to create a little bit more emotional connection. Can you think of examples of companies that do a really good job with that?
Yes. So I have one of my favorite examples. They're a Shippo customer. They're called Vinyl, and they ship subscription boxes of records, so vinyl records. And what they do with the tracking status is they know when the record box has arrived, and then they, once it has arrived, they also populate all of the songs into your Spotify like account.
Wow. So, yes. That's amazing.
So I think there are a lot of these smaller, cool things that you can do. It's not just about sending tracking updates. You can send like more personalized tracking updates. You can send a survey afterwards, like, you know, when the package has gotten there, and then you can send a survey to make sure that people liked it, or you can send like very specific, like, follow-on email communication, maybe even recommend items that other people have bought together with this one. As another example, some people send certain like devices that they only activate as soon as they know that the tracking status says it's been received.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think that this reminds me of do you know that platform, If This Then That?
Yes.
Or like there's another one that's more focused around businesses called Zapier, mm-hmm. Zapier. And, actually does Shippo connect with Zapier?
We don't right now.
Oh, that would be cool because you could really start to connect things together where you could take the Spotify example is really interesting because in theory you could do that all automatically in a pretty easy way with some, you know, different plug and play tools, where you could take okay, we know that this customer has received the product. So when that moment occurs, you know, send them a message, go create a Spotify playlist, and include that in the email or something like that. You can start to connect these disparate different systems and create something that's really personalized. That's not just like, hey, you got it. Please share it on social media or something. You know, that's become a little bit boring at this point.
Yeah. Agreed. And we give our customers tracking updates in an proactive way. And meaning, so to take a step back, so in the API, you can either pull for information, so like pinging our API to get information back, or we push information from the API to you. And with tracking updates, we push that information to you, letting the customer know that they're, like letting our customer, the e-commerce store, know that now is the time to send a tracking update, so it can get done in a very efficient and timely manner.
Another aspect of like, can you ship it is just, I also think of Warby Parker as a great example of this. Like they created that sample pack where you can get that for free and do the home try on before you, before you buy. And that's a completely free experience that Warby Parker has done the math on. That turns out to be worth it because if they send that, you know, a certain percentage of people will convert. But some of the things that they did to design that have a lot to do with the shipping rates that they can get. Like, you know that, for example, first class shipping from USPS is a specific rate that has a really good value, but it's only available under 13 ounces or something like that. I forget what the actual number is. But are there other tricks like that that you see your customers taking advantage of that help them create experiences that are special by taking advantage of certain class shipping rates? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a good question. I like one trick that I see some of our customers doing is around transit times. And I guess that is tied to different classes of shipping rates. So they're able to look at the data from like actual transit times and versus predicted transit times. And then in certain, like as an example, let's say from here to San Jose, first class mail, priority mail says it always takes, like their prediction is always, I think 3 to 5 days. But if we can look at data and say from here to San Jose, it actually 99% of the time always takes just 1 day instead of using the overnight shipping option to make it arrive within a day. You can also use the priority shipping option and we're fairly certain it'll arrive within a day. So these are some other optimization opportunities, like in terms of transit times and looking at just enough historic data that our customers have been looking at and asking us to build out for them to like optimize and save more money.
Are you familiar with Lob? Do they use Shippo?
I know them well. They don't use Shippo. They are taking care of the direct mailing component. So, yeah. And I think, I don't remember that stat very well. So I'm friends with Lior, their CEO. I think he said 1 in 7 Americans has received a direct mailer from Lob in the past already. So it's been... they've been growing very fast.
LOB.com, yeah, they are similarly an API that allows you to send postcards, send letters via API, which is really, it's so powerful. And when I was mentioning the If This Then That and Zapier, which are both kind of tools that help you connect different things together, it's almost overwhelming how many different things you can connect to each other now that we have like this huge box of Lego bricks, basically, of things that you can do to create really unique experiences. And I feel like that's an area that's really underutilized at the moment. Now that we have so many of these different APIs that let you do things, connecting them in weird and interesting ways is a big opportunity. I feel like Shippo is a big part of that.
Like, I do think that shipping updates and tying, like helping customers interact more with the e-commerce experience while the package is in transit is a big opportunity because the customer is at home, is excited about receiving their item. And instead of like getting bored or forgetting about having purchased something online. It's a like great time frame to engage with the customer, to get them excited, to like make sure the customer that gets top of mind for them that something's in the mail coming to their home.
Yeah. So as we wrap up, I wanted to say, if people want to know more about Shippo, they should definitely go take a look at the recent talk that you did at Y Combinator's Female Founders Conference, which I thought you did an incredible job. That was a really good one. And you've done a lot of interviews, which we'll link to in the show notes. But before we wrap up, I was curious about something. I noticed that you share very often photos from bookstores. I'm curious if that's just a hobby of yours. What are some books that you've been reading yes. lately, or are you just taking photos of bookstores? Because so they are beautiful.
Bookstores are kind of my happy place. So one of the other issues I have with Amazon is the paradox of choice. I normally just go on Amazon knowing exactly what I want, but it's not great for discovering new products, and that's what I love bookstores for. It's curated. You go in and it says best fiction books of 2017 or best nonfiction books, and they have like curated there with like a lot of times small handwritten cards, like the most liked, the best liked books or whatever the store owner like has put on display. And it's just so much fun to go in there and spend some time reading or like looking at the different options, just opening up a book and reading a couple of pages and then leaving with books that you normally wouldn't have found on Amazon because you didn't really know what to look for. And I think my favorite book this year has been Shoe Dog. I think it's written by Phil Knight. And it's a book about how Nike got started building their, like, now very well-known and very successful athletic clothing company. But it talks about their humble origins. It talks about starting a business and then almost failing so many times. And it's crazy to think about that, because now you look at Nike as a global brand. It's very well known. And I think it's important to keep in mind that all of these very successful companies and business people, they all started like everyone else. They were dealing with failure, a lot of failure, and people don't talk about it. They only look at their success now, but they've overcome like a lot of these challenges to be where they are today. And the other fun part I like in there is that it talks about building a startup in a time where the internet wasn't existent yet. So like he would write letters to his Japanese counterparts, which would take, I don't know, 3 weeks to get there and another 3 weeks for him to get a response. It's just crazy in today's world where we can send an email, even track the email, know if it's been open by our like BD partners or not, and then immediately expect a response. So I really liked the entire story of just dealing with failure many times and then dealing with business relationships in different cultures, and then his overall business philosophy.
That's awesome. I haven't read that one yet.
It's great.
I love it. I'm going to have to read it. Yeah, I have to pick it up. Nike is obviously a pretty incredible brand. It's probably like in the top three of all the like logos that, you know, if you ask people around the world, everyone recognizes that logo.
Yeah, and he also talks about how he picked the name and the logo, how it happened by pure chance, and how, yeah, it's, I don't want to take anything away, but it's a very fun read, especially because it's the logo and the brand is universally present today, and it talks about it just from the super early days.
I'll share one book that I just finished reading over the weekend that I devoured, which was, I don't know if you've read this, The Three Body Problem.
Oh, yes. Did you read the first one or all three?
I've only read the first one, but I'm, as some people know, I'm flying to Japan this week and I've never been there before and I've got a long flight. And so I've got the other two now. I'm hooked. I got to read the next two.
Yeah, that's very high on my list too. I loved reading all three books. So much
wow.
fun.
Yeah, it's a Chinese author, science fiction story that is very, I mean, it was written recently in the past, I think, 3 or 4 years, but it's very much about some of the current scientific science fiction challenges that people are thinking about around. I don't want to spoil too much, but about like, I think intelligence in general in the universe and what that means for humanity. It's actually, when I was looking up the Wikipedia page about it, Obama had a really good quote about it. He was saying that he read it while he was president and said that it made his problems with the Congress feel really petty in the grand scheme of things.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Anything else that we should cover before we wrap up? If people want to find out more about Shippo and about you, what should they do?
So I'm fairly active on Twitter. So if you like bad puns, shipping related tweets, and like an occasional tweet about my cat, you should for sure follow me on Twitter.
That's just your full name. We'll put that in the show notes. Laura Barron's Wu.
Yep.
At Laura, yeah, on Twitter. And then Shippo is goshippo.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
People can sign up, find out more about it. They can, you can just sign up for free and try the dashboard. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pay as you go. You don't have to commit to anything. And that's because a lot of our e-commerce stores, they're just getting started at the beginning. They can't really predict how much they're going to ship. So pay as you go is a great way for people to just like start very easily, and then they can ramp up and eventually like switch to a plan if they have a more predictable shipping volume.
If you're sending a package to your mom for Christmas, mm-hmm. you can use Shippo.
Yes.
You don't have to be a business. You can just, whatever you're doing, it's pretty straightforward. It's great. You can print a label on your home printer.
Yep.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Hope we have you again soon. I have so much more to ask you about. Shipping is something we think about a lot over here. So I have a lot more questions.
I really appreciate being on the show. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review. Could be just a sentence long. By going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.